Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour podcast recorded every week at the studios of historic WJR Radio in Detroit. Both hours of the show are available each week on this podcast and are streamed to our affiliates across the state of Michigan. We're also proud to be part of Detroit's newest and fastest-growing podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
A good afternoon to you. Hi, Foster Brown, co-host and producer of the Internet Advisor, welcoming you to 2 hours of our show. First hour, we're going to be going international. Matter of fact, we'll start off by saying shalom to Mike Brennan, who is in Tel Aviv, Israel, for an international cybersecurity conference. And Gary Baker will be calling in to us as well from down at Fort Lauderdale, and we'll be talking about and focusing on cybersecurity in this first hour. So stay tuned. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, here, and my co-hosts in studio, I might add, Ed Rudell. Eddie, good to have you with us.
Always great to be here, Foster.
And Mr. Shane Hamlin is here as well.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all choked with emotion.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm back, and I hate to upset you. You're overexcited.
We've got quite a program here, quite a crew. As a matter of fact, Mr. Gary Baker's with us from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. It's a nice day in the neighborhood for all of us. And in just a moment, we're going to be checking in with Tel Aviv. Now, it's midnight there. Matter of fact, a little bit after midnight, 10 minutes after midnight there. So, Mike Brennan will be our guest.
So what's Mike doing over there?
I don't know. It's midnight at the Oasis there, so who knows?
And it's not sunny over there.
Why is he there for a conference?
Not at midnight, it isn't, I hope. Matter of fact, we probably should just say hello to Mike and bring him up here. Mike, how are you doing? Shalom.
Shalom to you. Yes, if Gary wants to talk about heat, I can tell him all about heat. I'm in Israel.
Oh, I bet you are. Matter of fact, we'll talk about this a little later on, but part of your schedule is to go to a place called Beersheba, which I understand is in the Negev desert, isn't it?
Yeah, right in the middle of nowhere. But it's south of Jerusalem. It's sort of the equivalent of Israel's Silicon Valley. That's on our agenda.
Well, you talk about Silicon Valley there. Silica is probably the only thing around you, which I think is sand.
Well, he's there for a cybersecurity conference,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to talk. Matter of fact, that will be our focus in just a minute where we talk a little bit more about where you're out there. You were invited, however, by the State of Israel to join and cover the goings-on at Cyber Week 2017. Now, that's based in Tel Aviv University, am I right?
Yeah, it starts on Monday, and one of the featured speakers is Prime Minister Netanyahu, so it'll be interesting security, to say the least.
Oh, my word. Well, being in that country is interesting security. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but I just wanted to make sure I said hello to Mike Brennan, who is going to be with us during the first half of this hour. And joining us shortly also will be Richard Steenen, who has been on many times with us and is our international security expert. Richard, I think, has spoken at that conference in the past. Am I right, Mike?
Yeah, a couple of years ago. Actually, when I was invited by the Israeli government, he was the first person I called to check this out and see what never having been here before, what to dress like. And I can tell you, shorts and a very light shirt is all you need here. It was like almost 90 degrees and humid today.
No kidding. All right. Well, we'll get down to more details on that. Before we get into that, guys, some of the things that have been going on in the world of technology around us, anything stick out for you this week, Shane or Ed?
You know, I've been concentrating on building sheds and welding in my shed and putting in stairways. Well, I put an attic in my attic stairs in my shed. Well, I mean, that's about it. So, I'm changing my cyber tools for hand tools this week.
All right. Well, somebody who probably is changing his cyber tools for something else, at least, is Travis Kalanick, who is the former now CEO of Uber. Did that surprise anybody?
I mean, there's been a lot of chairheads that have stepped down from there, right? He's not the only one. I mean...
He's one of the founders, though.
Yeah, but I think other people that are part of the board have been stepping down.
Yeah, I mean, I actually heard the audio of that two days before he actually made the announcement, and it was something along one of the board members was actually talking about that there's going to be another woman on the board of Uber because of their discrimination and not a friendly place.
Yeah.
And when she started describing about having another woman on the board, he made a disparaging remark about, oh, great, more talking, or something along those lines. And I'm like, God, just stick your head in the sand. It was awful.
Foot and mouth disease, yes. Sounds like it.
Yeah. Right.
Gay, you know, some people have
way overdue.
Yeah, is there a kind of a culture of like a male chauvinism out there in Silicon Valley? You think in some ways it needs to be overcome?
Oh, I don't think so. I think this is, you know, you can find instances of that kind of behavior, and sometimes just as bad in other ways. just anywhere, but this in particular was about an individual and the way he kind of drove that culture.
Yeah.
You know, it's too good a company to have somebody like that leading it.
Yeah, you wonder if, well, it seems at least locally, Lyft is doing a pretty good job of competing with
it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Lyft.
Yeah, and that's a GM.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Gear.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's a GM invested company. And GM put a big investment into Lyft. Yeah. It's interesting. I was down in New Orleans, and I said, all right, I'm going to try Lyft. And I tried Lyft, and it was great. And the person that picked me up said, yeah, about 90% of us work for both Uber and Lyft.
Yeah, it makes sense.
No kidding.
And it does make sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. So both of us.
It was just interesting that how they make that that work and allow them to work for either or both companies. So
it's kind of interesting.
But that's good. Hey, did you hear about the final report for the Tesla driver that was decapitated by running under a semi-truck?
No.
That was over a year ago. No, I hadn't heard it, Gary.
So the report came out and said he ignored 7 warnings.
Oh, my Lord.
There were 7 warnings.
Plenty
That's
of warnings.
That's why, you know, we got to be careful when, you know, when something just happens until, you know, the final report and they really can get into it. So anyway, just, you know, I think that's going to help the whole industry.
Yeah, exactly. And it's one of those cases of grabbing headlines and running with them without having all the full details. Back in just a moment, Mr. Mike Brennan will be with us from Israel. Welcome to our international edition of the Internet Advisor. Gary, you know, it's funny. I think back when you and I started this about 20 years ago, could we imagine that we would be tying together calls from, over 6,000 miles away with Mike Brennan in Tel Aviv, Israel, and you down in Florida and the rest of us here in studio. It's absolutely fascinating about all of us being connected and essentially over wirelessly. I mean, over the Internet in many ways.
You know, it's interesting, too, because I'm reading a book called Tesla, about Tesla's life and how he dreamed about wireless communication.
That's right.
Back in, 1896, 98, something like that.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
They were trying to make that happen. And now it's here.
Yeah, I just off aside, just for one thing, we've watched the series Genius on PBS about Einstein's life. What fascinated me was how many things were developed, scientific inventions came out in that near the end of the 1800s and the beginnings of the 1900s, x-rays and the discovery of all sorts of incredible stuff.
Well, yeah, that's before they fluorinated water, you know. That's why. I'm just kidding.
You know? That was it, Ed. I think you've uncovered the conspiracy of all conspiracies.
Mary, the mother of all conspiracies. Well, let's get back to welcoming once again.
Well, hey, you know the most famous quote from that time was in 1900, and the gentleman that ran the U.S. Patent Office
wanted to close down the patent office, he said, anything worthwhile inventing has already been invented.
Oh, my Lord.
I do remember that quote. Yep.
Just because it was so prolific, you know, the inventions and the patents that leading up to that year.
Utterly astounding.
Yeah, we've had a few since then, though.
Yeah, I think we have. Well, hey, Mike Brennan is with us from Tel Aviv, Israel, where it's a little after midnight at the Oasis over there. Mike, once again, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Foster.
Good to have you with us. You are there for the 7th Annual International Cybersecurity Conference that's taking place at Tel Aviv University, am I right?
Yes, it starts on Monday.
And we also have online with us Richard Steenan, who is our expert on all things super cybersecurity-wise in terms of international reach, certainly, Mike. Richard, thanks so much again for being with us.
Hey, Foster, good to be here.
Yep. Matter of fact, the two of you have collaborated on some books, and you were at one time, Mike, just told us a little bit before the break, you were a speaker at the conference there or just attending?
So I attended a slightly different conference that was downtown Tel Aviv, but we went out and talked to the professor that's kind of the father of cyber in Israel, and the conference that Mike's at is his conference, and it's supposed to be really good.
Yeah, and Mike, what is the scope of the conference there and that you've seen so far?
Well, again, it doesn't start officially until Monday, but we've been pretty thoroughly briefed. They brought in a delegation of cybersecurity journalists from around the world, and we're all gathered here provided by the Israeli government, and have a really lovely hotel right on the beach, so it's really nice.
Oh, my.
It's essentially just boring into what the big issues are right now in cybersecurity. But, I mean, it's a who's who of this is a, you know, five-star panel. As I said, we've got the head of the IDF cyber arm. We're getting briefed with him on Sunday in a private meeting. We also have Professor Isaac Ben-Israel. I think that might be who Richard was referring to. We have a 9 a.m. briefing with him tomorrow morning. And then we're going out to the cyber gym area. I'm not totally sure what that is, but we're going to be checking that out. And then we have a really nice dinner tomorrow night with the head of the civilian sector of the Israeli Cyber Bureau. So that's just on Sunday. That's before we get to the big sessions on Monday. And you got Netanyahu coming. You've got several folks from the White House Homeland Security coming. Hmm. You've got the former of the NSA coming. All the who's who of cybersecurity in the world coming in for this.
Richard, what is the measure of what's going on there? I mean, is this like the summit of and a who's who of who's involved on an international level in security?
It is. You know, the focus is Israel, but certainly the rest of the world pays attention, and all of the major investors are going to be at the conference, you know, looking for their next cybersecurity investment. And I'm sure there will be representatives from all the big banks, you know, the Morgan Stanleys and Citis, as there were when I was there. And they're all looking to evaluate software and maybe invest or maybe just purchase software and help the companies out.
I'm going to ask this question to both of you guys. What is it about Israel that has made it such a huge player in cybersecurity and in just in terms of cyber world, period?
Yeah, well, they're on the cyber front, right? They've experienced cyber attacks and have been aware of them longer than the rest of the world has. And then they've got the famous Unit 802, which is a, you know, regular program. They cycle people through, you know, they've got universal conscription in Israel. So everyone when they're 18 enters the armed forces for mandatory 2 years. But if you want to be in the cyber unit, it's a 3-year stint. And so these guys get, you know, hands-on experience warding off attacks and presumably engaging in attacks. And when they come out of there, they are, you know, they're still young, and it's a booming technology economy, so they start cybersecurity companies. The very first one of note, of course, was Checkpoint Software, which is now the largest firewall vendor in the world, led by Gil Shwed.
Ah, okay. Somebody described it as it's a country that's a little bigger than New Jersey or about the same size as New Jersey, but they're huge in the whole cyber world.
Yep, and they tend to inflate how big they are as well. I'm sure, Mike, you've already been told several times that they have 450 cybersecurity companies. I have counted them, and I've used everybody's list. And they're 250, which is still huge. That's more than anywhere else in the world other than Silicon Valley, which has 340.
A little braggadocio, okay.
A little braggadocio. Yeah. Mike, yeah. I understand there are like how many participants are there that are going to be in this?
Well, they're saying anywhere between 5,000 to 7,000 people will be here.
Wow. I'm going to say, during the week, you're going to be covering this for people who are listening to us right now and who regularly hear you on here with MI Tech News. You are going to be covering this throughout the week, am I right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Every night I'll come back here and file because I'm 7 hours ahead of you. So when I file, it'll be, you know, morning where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to shoot video tomorrow because we're having our private session. And again on Wednesday, because we're going out to Beersheba on Wednesday. But on Monday and Tuesday, I don't want to bring video equipment into the conference because the security is going to be so tight.
Oh, I bet.
But I'll shoot on when we do these private, because, again, we have a whole delegation of cybersecurity journalists here. So I'll be in that pack, running with the pack here for the next few days. But what I'm really looking forward to, as an aside, is on Thursday they're giving us a tour of Jerusalem. So,
oh, yeah.
I'm really excited about that. But part of that tour also is the tour of a venture capital company called Our Crowd Investments. And that's one of those companies Richard made reference to. It's an Israeli company, but they do venture capital investment in these companies.
Hmm. Richard, from your perspective, what are going to be some of the big issues in terms of cybersecurity on an international level?
Yeah, so the conference will probably be heavy into IoT, Internet of Things security.
Oh, yeah, right.
There'll be dozens of startups that address that. And then part of that, of course, is industrial control system security. And that's become, you know, just in this last week, tremendous reporting by Ellen Nakashima at the Washington Post. Kind of uncovered the story behind the, you know, discovery of Russian interference in U.S. elections.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's reporting that President Obama authorized implanting, I think they use the term cyber bombs. I'm sorry to say that. Mm-hmm. in Russian infrastructure.
Oh my word.
Which, you know, obviously is an escalation, though I'm hearing other people say, everybody does that.
Wow. Richard, I'm sorry, we're very close to having to wrap this up right now, and I want to thank you for stopping by and giving us a little bit of perspective from your point of view as an international expert on cybersecurity. Thanks so much for being with us. And Mike, you take care of yourself out there. I'm just curious, have you had to go through any particular extraordinary security measures as you're in Israel?
Only when we took off from Newark. I'd already gone through U.S. security checks, but before we boarded the flights from 12-hour flight from Newark to Tel Aviv, we had to go through another layer of security with bomb-sniffing dogs and the whole thing.
Wow.
So.
Wow. Well, we'll have to have you talk. I'm sure you'll write about that experience as well. Mike Brennan, from the editor of MI Tech News in Tel Aviv, Israel. Have a good night's sleep, Mike, and get to work. We have a link to your coverage of the conference. Richard Steenan, thanks so much for being with us. Back in just a moment with Kasten Thomas to talk about fishing. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown here, and we have in studio Shane Hamlin, along with Ed Riddell, and Gary Baker is online with us from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. We've been talking about security, and somebody who's been recently in studio with us to talk about security is none other than Kasten Thomas, and Kasten is back with us. He's the CEO of iWorks Technology, and Kasten, thanks for being with us here on the show again.
None other than Kasten Thomas.
Yep. And Kasten, one of the things that I wanted you to talk about with us, rather than having, you know, cybersecurity as being this huge thing that's, you know, in a foreign country and outside of us and is, you know, hard to get our hands around, published an article that I saw that talked about practically giving some advice to people on how to make sure that they weren't going to end up victims of phishing attacks. And I thought maybe that today would be a good day just to talk about what the practical implications are for people. You know, some tips that you have from your information. And I thought, Shane, you see people coming into your shop a lot who have been fished.
Now, when we're talking fishing, we're talking about trout fishing, what, salmon? What are we talking about here?
People
we're
fishing.
We're talking about email fishing.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Just want to clear it up for our listeners.
Well, you know, that's a good point. Why don't we clear up what the whole notion of fishing is? Kasten, go ahead and do that.
Well, the analogy is great because every fishing expedition has a hook. Mm-hmm. And in cybersecurity, phishing is when a hacker sends out, it used to be a large group of emails. You know, they'd send out a million emails because it costs practically nothing for them to send them out, hoping that one of the people that they sent an email to would bite the hook. And the hook would be, open this file or click on this link, and naturally, because it's a hacker, that link or that document that's attached had malware in it, and that evolved into ransomware, and now it's costing people $300 every time they click on a bad piece of a link to something that they shouldn't have clicked on.
Right. Gary?
Well, Kasten, I would like you to also talk about whaling, because that's becoming very prevalent, right?
And, that's right.
And they're going after the most gullible people.
Well, the whaling is going after the big money. The whaling is going after CEOs of companies and banks. And they're not sending out those massive kinds of emails to millions of people. They're doing research, and they're targeting people based on something that's emotional to them or something that means something to them. I got a vague email a couple of months ago from one of my customers. It said, open this file and tell me what you think.
Oh.
And I'm like,
Yeah,
and that's one of the techniques for knowing that you've got something. You know, we all need to be very, very cognizant of what these emails look like. You know, and they tend to be vague. Open this file, or, hey, you know, I just tried this product and you really need to look at it. You click on the link, and before you know it, you have ransomware on your computer.
Although Kasten, some of them can be very specific. I'm reminded of one back almost at the time that I met you. I was dealing with the CFO of a company who had gotten an email from the CEO that said, "Hey, I just met with this vendor. We're a little behind in paying them. Send them off a check for at the amount was." Like $14,000 right away, and then we'll worry about the rest later. And the CFO said, "Oh, it came from our CEO. I better do it." He was on his cell phone, and he turned around and sent it to the controller and said, "Please pay this bill." And the controller happened to be on the computer and did a mouse over and realized, "Wait a minute, that's not right. It says one thing, but the URL is something else." And thankfully, they caught it. But there's been a lot of examples where they didn't catch it and money was transferred.
Yeah.
There was actually a high-tech company in Silicon Valley. I can't remember the name, but they had over $1 million in funds transferred that they never got back.
Whoa.
Exactly the same kind of scenario.
Well, you know, this reminds me of something that happened this week. This is Ed. And many of us work for corporations where we have cybersecurity classes and we're supposed to just go through them. But you have to realize these are very important for a lot of our listeners out there. You work for companies, or maybe you own a small company. Just a list of employee names that work for the company, or, you know, like a published an address book or something like that is very valuable to the people on the internet. I mean, because might have the CEO, the CFO, that and they're just gathering this information up.
Well, there are people mining LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. They are going to LinkedIn and building
and Facebook.
A profile of the organization chart.
Yep. Kasten, one of your first points is to be aware of how phishing emails can get you. And it says, learn how to spot the obvious phishing clues. What are some of those obvious clues?
If it's vague,
okay.
If it's poor grammar, because very rarely are these phishing expeditions done in the United States. The fishing expeditions are usually being done by people in countries that don't have a lot of cybersecurity prevention. They're difficult to trace, and even if they are traced back to them, they're difficult to find, and the governments probably will not extradite the people to the country mm-hmm. for prosecution. Mm-hmm. So typically they won't have great English skills. So if you see something from even your brother-in-law, I'm now suspicious of getting links from my father, who is very 1950s in his knowledge of of technology. Sorry, Dad. He's a Twitter freak and does everything from his iPhone. But you know, if I get something from him and it looks mysterious, I'm very cautious about opening it. And I'll give him a call, or the next time I talk to him, I say, "Hey, Dad, you know, did you send me something? It looks fishy."
Yeah. And then Gary brought up a good point: is you don't have the ability to mouse over, not very easily, on a mobile device.
Now, tell people what you mean by mouse over. Well,
Gary brought this: this is where you hover your mouse over the link that yes. either is the user's email address or is the embedded link within the email, and that can usually. It's not the same as what is described in the written text.
Exactly.
You can't do that on a portable device yet very easily. So don't, you know, wait till you get back to the office or wait till you get home where you can use a real computer and mouse over and not a pretend computer like a mobile phone to make multi-million dollar decisions.
Shane, I'm just curious. Yeah. From in the shop, when people bring their computers in and they've been hit by something, well, what are some of the scenarios that you've seen?
You know, it's so discouraging. And you know, we're talking to the public. We were talking whaling. Gary brought up whaling, and then there's fishing. You know, the fishing is more I want to direct it towards the average user, the senior citizen. They target senior citizens a lot because they're trusting people. Mm-hmm. You know,
and they'll go after them with their bank, for instance.
Oh yeah, and you know they come. There's a lot of things that they get hit so hard, and they get these calls, and a lot of them are phone calls now, not so much emails anymore.
Oh.
You know, they'll get a phone call that says, you know, hey, I'm from, you know, Gupdar from Microsoft, and you get on your computer, and there's a virus. Mm. You need to fix that right away.
Yeah. Kasten, were you going to say something?
Oh, always. I always have plans. You know, getting back to the more hints on what constitutes phishing, if you see something that's mysterious, it mm-hmm. makes you wonder, I wonder what that is, and you're not sure if you should click on it. If you're not sure, don't.
You know, Shane makes a very good point about, you know, people want to trust what people are saying, and it is a shame that they sometimes go after the senior citizens.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's a fact of life, and we all have senior citizens. Sometimes we are one. We all have them in our life, and it's really helpful to have those kinds of conversations.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break in just a moment. And Kasten, you have another point here that I want you to talk to when we come back, and that is one of the about phishing emails is to watch out for pushing emails that push emotional buttons. And maybe you can give some examples of that when we return. We're talking with Kasten Thomas, who is the founder and CEO of iWorks Technology, a security agency in the Ann Arbor area. Gary Baker's here online, and we're talking about this in hopefully in terms that you can get hold of. And you may recognize, hey, I had an email like that that came through. And hopefully we'll give you some ways of protecting yourself so that you're not, you know, invaded with some kind of a piece of malware, or that, and sadly, that somebody is able to get money out of you and steal it and further discourage you about the state of human nature. I think that may be one of the casualties that goes on is our ability to trust other people. You're listening to the Internet Advisor, back in just a moment as we continue to talk about security here. Don't forget, our second hour is your hour. That's when you get to call us with your questions at 800-859-0957. We've got experts here in studio ready to answer your questions, provided you give us a call as quickly as possible. Before we get any further, thank you to our super engineer, Eric Dorsch, who has juggled grenades here and had people calling in from all over the world. Thanks so much, Eric, for your efforts. And we're talking about security. Kasten Thomas is online with us right now, president of iWorks Technology in Ann Arbor. And we're talking about some practical ways of protecting yourself against phishing attacks in particular. And Kasten, before we were talking in studio here, and Shane has a fascinating perspective on this, and because he's talked with many people who are victims who come into the store then, your place, Comptech, and say, my computer's a mess, what do I do? Yeah. You know, but you mentioned, Kasten, before we went to this, that in some of your points of what to watch out for, he said, look out for emails that push emotional buttons. And that'll feed into your story too, Shane. But yeah. Go ahead. What do you mean by that, Kasten?
Well, what I mean is that when testosterone or adrenaline is released, it affects the way we think. And in emotional or stressful situations, we make bad decisions.
Mm.
And so hackers are learning to push those emotional buttons that cause people who are receiving emails to make bad decisions, which is click on this link. Now, when you combine that with all of the information that we're putting out on the internet, and I Google myself all the time to find out what's out there about me because it gives me hints about what someone might use against me. We're publishing all this information on Facebook and Instagram, and it's not even us. Imagine a scenario where a hacker sees a picture of a person at the local bar, and they get an email the next morning that says, hey, I found your credit card in the parking lot of that particular sports bar. Click on this link because I want to make sure that it's you.
Oh, boy.
And so we're not only responsible for protecting ourselves, but, you know, a lot of Facebook profiles are public, which means anybody can Google on it and see who's on it and see who the photos are, and it gives a name and sometimes clicks to the link. And simply through Googling someone, you can find out immense amounts of information.
Yeah.
I have 7 different emails. 3 of them I use predominantly. They're all out on the internet, but I know that. And I know that if somebody Googles, they can find it.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes back to trusting people. I've got a beautiful wife, and she's one of the most trustworthy people I've ever met. And I trust her completely. But I don't trust any emails from her.
Oh, I got you.
Because they might not be from her.
Exactly. Absolutely. Shane, one of the things you mentioned in our conversation between the breaks here was this isn't just email. It's also now phone calls, particularly to the elderly.
Yeah, I mean, it's phishing, whether it's through an email or 1,000 phone calls, they're still phishing for that one that takes the bait. And, you know, there's a short-term version where they're going to get you for a couple $100 right away. You need to get on and fix your machine. And there's also, which we can talk about later in another episode, there's a long game. There's a long-term scheme where they are, when you talk about emotions, where after 2 hours of sitting on the computer fixing, they're learning all about their family in India and how they're living and the poverty level and their children's names and when they were married. And, you know, a week later you get a phone call from that same technician saying their son was in an accident and they need help. So, I mean, there's so many versions of this. It's just insane.
Yeah. Gary?
Yeah, you know, we have to be very careful because as one of the ways that the bad guys really help credentialize what they're talking about is they say, look, you've got a virus, and they point to a file. And look, search on your computer, and you'll find this file. And they do, and they find, oh, my gosh, you know, that file, that's bad, when, in fact, that's a file that actually made their operating system work, right?
Yeah.
So when they removed it, it not only did they get money, but they wrecked the computer, right, the operating system.
Yeah.
Really careful when...
Yeah. Gave them even more reasons to dig into your computer. Kasten, thanks so much for being with us. By the way... Have we posted any of this information on the internet about the, we're talking about some tips on avoiding phishing scams. I'm trying to think if we've posted anything that you put up there, or could you give me something that we could, you know, link to people to?
Absolutely. And I did publish something on LinkedIn earlier this week.
Okay.
It's slightly related, but I'd be happy to write something up that we can put on the internet. Internet Advisor website.
Excellent. So what we'll do when we afterwards, as we're putting the show notes together, is we'll include some of these tips so you can, not just for you, who are the listener right now, but also for somebody you know who may, you know, be vulnerable out there. It may be an aunt, an uncle, whoever, that you can show them these things and help them to avoid becoming a victim. Kasten, thanks so much for being with us here on the show today. It's good to have
great
you with us,
you.
As always. Kasten Thomas, and we will, as I said, put that information out there for you afterwards with our complete show notes.
Hey, Foster, you know, yeah. One of the things mentioned was about that cyber bomb and mm-hmm. How Gary mentioned that we, General Hayden, who was on our show, that was actually in June 2012, where we had General Hayden on here, and he was talking about the cyber bomb and then how that was just recently implemented.
Right. Yeah, Richard, I had talked about... Go ahead.
It was in regard to Stuxnet, and while he couldn't or would he deny that we did it, and this was when we sent a virus over to speed up the motors on the centrifuges for the nuclear reactors in Iran, he thought that while we had to do that, he was concerned about unleashing another...
Yeah.
Type of a weapon into the world mm-hmm. that would somehow be targeted back at us.
Yep.
This was a virus that did physical damage. And, you know, he likened it to the Manhattan Project, you know, that ended World War II.
That is a dilemma. You know, but we're seeing, for instance, now ISIS using approaches on the Internet. A lot of the tactics that have been out there before to go after them are now being used by them in very cagey ways. And by the way, if you would like to hear something rather fascinating, you can go to internetadvisor.net and Google for, there's a little search box there. You can type in General Hayden. H-A-Y-D-E-N. He was on with us in 2012 on June the 9th, almost exactly this month, back in 5 years ago, talking about, at that point, as Gary said, Stuxnet, but the whole, the impact of using that kind of a weapon. As you said, Gary, it's kind of fascinating to think back to the Oppenheimer, Professor Oppenheimer and the Manhattan Project and, you know, the horror of having unleashed that kind of devastation. We were going to have somebody look this up, but I think at the did anybody Google that? I am become death, because I thought that that was a quote of Oppenheimer as he looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
Was it?
It was actually. Hold on. I didn't.
I
had already to go earlier.
You had it. All right. By the way, while he's looking that up,
and Destroyer Worlds.
And destroy our worlds. Wow.
Yes.
Read that quote entirely, could you?
All I have is this, now I am become death. I am become death, the destroyer of worlds. That's from Oppenheimer himself. I mean, that was a
yeah.
quote. And that's all I have.
Wow. And you think of the effect of those kind of weapons being unleashed on the world. And 5 years ago, General Hayden talking about while we applauded, if you will, at a distance, the destruction of these potentially tools used for Iran to get into the nuclear race, there was this kind of sense of horror that this is now mm-hmm. in the wild,
right,
and can be just as easily turned.
You know,
back
and this all started back in 2003 or 2004 when we had, was it the MS Blaster, or was it the Melissa virus that accidentally caused the chain reaction, which took out the East Coast?
Yeah,
possibly.
I was
depending
also,
on who you listen
Gary,
to.
Gary, what was you remember that what that virus was? Was it the Beagle? The Beagle? Beagle? Virus that went out?
Yeah, it was the Beagle virus, right? I think that's the one we were thinking of.
Yeah, I was working for Daimler Chrysler at the time in their in a news department there, and all of a sudden we were just offline. We couldn't contact anybody anywhere. The network is down, mm-hmm. and apparently it was. And we all just kind of sat there and looked at our monitors and thought, what do we do now?
Well, and that was an accident, basically, where a virus actually impacted some critical infrastructure. So, yeah.
Yeah, kind of scary. Hey, on a more positive note, before we wrap this thing up here, guys, want to congratulate the folks at the Michigan Council of Women in Technology, just reporting that in the last, I believe it is, 12 years, they
12 years.
Over $1 million in scholarships has been put out there in the pursuit of getting young women women, period, into technology. Congratulations to the folks at MCWT, which is the Michigan Council of Women in Technology, for that incredible work that they have done over these last 12 years to put over $1 million into helping young people.
What a great milestone.
Absolutely. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break here for the news, and hour number two is coming up, and that is your hour when we want you to call in with your questions at 800-859-0957. Again, 800-859-0957, back to answer your questions.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, theinternetadvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and many other resources. You'll also find links to mitechnews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter, edited by Mike Brennan. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact button on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget to look for us on Facebook and Twitter and at Detroit's newest podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard. It's the second hour of the Internet Advisor. I am Foster Brown, the co-host and producer of the program. We've got folks in studio here who have been helping people for a long time. That's Shane Hamlin, Ed Rudell, and Gary Baker is with us as well. I'm here to help you. But what we need now is your questions at 800-859-0957. Please don't be bashful. The first person in gets right to the calls, 800-859-0957. Thank you so much.
You have to forgive us.
Sorry about that.
Internet Advisor, and we were just talking about the Wonder Woman movie and the whole comic books.
Gotham. And
There you go, folks. Now you know what happens behind the scenes here.
We're trying to talk Foster into going, because you just said you just saw, what was the show?
The Martian.
The Martian, which was with Matt Damon. He's always being rescued. Saving Private Ryan. Let's save him. Let's save Matt Damon from Mars. I mean, that was the big...
In Interstellar, they saved him, too.
Yeah,
he was
in
Interstellar
as well. That's right. But I've heard that...
no one needs to save Wonder Woman.
The Martian, no. The Martian apparently was an excellent book as well.
Yes.
Did you read it?
Or? I read it, and it's just as... It's better than the movie. Of course, most books are. But it's written by an engineer.
Yeah.
And he wrote this as he... I think he was a NASA engineer. And he wrote this.
Oh, really?
And it's so easy to read if you're of an engineering mindset. Because he logically steps through all the processes of, you know, from spaceship to, you know, how to grow potatoes on Mars. It was just...
That is fascinating. But by the way, our number now is 800-859-0957, and Dee will be with you in just a moment. Just to remind you that our mantra here, the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. And just before we went on the air, Eric Dortch, who was our engineer during the first hour, was telling me that there have been like three people who have called in and said, can we call in right now? And that was during Dean Krauskopf's gardening program. Well, now is the time for you to make that call at 800-859-0957. And let's go to D in Rochester Hills. D, how may we help you? Hang on a second. We may need to make sure that we've got you potted up. And Danielle's going to do that in just a second.
It was the Martian that we were talking about. I'm sorry, the Martian.
But she also has got a topic that's near and dear to my heart because of my having done exactly the same thing. So, D, are you with us now?
Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you, D. I saw the issue that you're dealing with, and Gary and Ed, please do not break out in guffaws of laughter about this. Tell us what your problem is, Dee.
About 3 weeks ago, I spilled my coffee in the morning on my laptop keyboard.
Yep.
In the kitchen, and the keys don't work, and I have a password to get into my computer, so I have, like, no way to get into my laptop.
Oh, yes, you do.
And we've all done that.
We've done it, but you know what's worse is if you use sugar. Do you have cream or sugar in your coffee?
Yes.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah.
No, why? Why, Ed? What is the significance of that?
If it was just coffee, it probably would have evaporated. It might have been a little sticky because of the caramelization during the evaporation process. But cream and sugar just gum up a keyboard like nothing.
Yeah.
So is there any... Now, the reason I'm chuckling about this is because I did this, oh my goodness, it must be years and years ago. You were with us at that point, I think, Ed. And I had been in Philadelphia on a business trip, had been sick as a dog, and just before I went on the airplane, I had a cup of tea that I was sipping on next to my laptop, and I had some sugar in it, sweetened it just a little bit, and I spilled that on the keyboard of that Dell laptop, and that's all she wrote.
Yeah, it's going to make you want to switch to Splenda, you know, really.
Okay, guys, seriously now, can we help Dee get back into her computer?
Yeah, very easy. Actually, what you're going to do is just going to hook up an external keyboard right to a USB port.
An external keyboard?
Yeah, just take a regular old keyboard from a computer with a USB port, plug it right into the side of your laptop, give it a few seconds to detect the new keyboard and load the basic driver, and then all of a sudden you just start typing away.
So that'll work if the keyboard is attached. Sure. It'll work. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, unless there's a key actually stuck down, but usually Windows doesn't it allow you to power up with a stuck key.
No,
actually at the login screen, it'll say, we've noticed that you struck this key 5 times. Would you like to turn on, and I can't remember
the sticky key.
Sticky key assistant.
And what'll happen is...
They're all sticky.
And never fear. I mean, we replace keyboards all day, every day, every week. Someone's spilling something. And I can always tell what it is when once I open it up. I can see if it was beer, coffee, wine. Wine is the worst. Wine is the worst.
Really?
Milk is the worst because it sours and it's just...
It does smell.
Ugh.
Yeah. But you know what? It's not hard. Take it to where are you calling from again?
Rochester Hill.
Well, you're not too far from my shop right up there at Shaner and Hall Road. But, you know, you can take to any local computer store. It's very easy to replace a keyboard. Keyboards aren't expensive.
No, they aren't.
You know, probably under $100 fix.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, because it's like got the flat keys, it's attached.
No,
they can fix it.
Yeah, we can fix those as well. I mean, it probably should be taken apart anyway and cleaned all the gook out of it anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we have a electro clean that we use on circuitry and motherboards that really will clean the good, get it nice and clean for you.
All right, Dee.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you so much.
All right, Dee. Thank you so much for giving us a call. Right. Yeah, I'm sorry that you had this experience, but we'll see if we can...
Yeah, me too. It won't happen again.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said.
Okay, have a good day.
All right, Dee, take care. That's oh, man, do I remember that, Ed.
The worst experience I ever had was with one of these is when we had to have Dell come in to when I worked at EDS. This is years ago, and someone had actually spilt breast milk in there. Milk is bad enough, but breast milk. So it became a biohazard at that point.
Oh, no.
But it was under warranty. So the guy, he says, I get one of these about once a year, and he had to put hazmat suit on.
No.
With a respirator and gloves. And he,
breast milk.
Yep. And he was able to replace the motherboard, the keyboard, and he did it all.
Hmm. In a hazmat suit.
Well, he was pretty geared up. He was sweating when he was done, but he had the respirator on, too.
Oh, my goodness.
Boy.
All right, Bob in Garden City and the rest of you out there giving us a call. We'll be right back to tackle your problems at 800-859-0957. It's the Internet Advisor. We're out there for you, ready to answer your questions. Hey, guys, I wanted to check on something with you before we get to our next caller. Bob from Garden City, we'll be with you in just a second. And Steve down in Wyandotte. Hey, and by the way, you folks out there, 800-859-0957. This works so well when you call early instead of everybody jamming up near the end of the program. So I'm delighted, and we'll get to those calls quickly. One of the things I wanted to say, and Ed, I think you and both you and Gary pointed this out to me, and Shane probably will agree with it. When you spill something on a laptop, just shut it down. Don't take it and try to like turn it so you're getting the liquid out, because
correct,
that could in fact then flow right straight into your hard drive and fry that or the motherboard or someplace else.
Yeah, shut it down, unplug it, shut it down.
Yep, and remove the battery.
Yeah, and I wouldn't touch the battery because then it would require you to flip it over most times, right?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay.
Which would spread the liquid.
Just leave it there, unplug it, and if you've got a Lenovo, Most of Lenovo's will have drain ports. Just let it drain.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Most of Lenovo's have a drain port.
Oh, that is really cool.
My tractor has a drain port.
Does it?
Yeah. I just discovered it.
You know, you say that.
I might have a drain port,
you
too.
You say you don't pour that back out. You say the port, you don't pour it back out. What if it's your last beer or something?
Yeah.
You want to pour it back to glass.
Or that Chardonnay that you wanted.
Oh, my gosh.
We're out of coffee at the office. Sometimes we have to dilute some keyboards.
Oh, dear. God help us. What you get from there should be sent down to the CDC, probably. All right, Bob from Garden City, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How may we help you?
Okay, guys. I'm having a problem with Microsoft Security Essentials.
Hmm.
I'm using that on a laptop with Windows 7.
Okay.
I'm connected directly to the modem. I'm not doing this over Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
But when I do an update, it goes probably a quarter to a halfway through. It doesn't go any further. When I try to back out of that program, it won't let me. It won't let me shut it down. I have to, back out of the computer. And I've tried it again, and I get the same results.
Well, do you have more than one antivirus program installed on your computer?
No, I do not.
Okay. Can Windows 7, you can uninstall Microsoft Security Essentials, can't you?
Sure.
Right. Yes, you can.
Yes, you can. Mm-hmm. So you can go to Programs and Features in the Control Panel, or you could just go in the search bar, Programs and Features, or in the search bar, type Programs and Features, and then you could scroll down until you see the Microsoft Security Essentials, and you can actually uninstall it, and then go to the Microsoft website and re-download a fresh copy. I mean, that's the first thing I would think of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the other thing, Shane, what about, does Microsoft Security Essentials actually download to the same place that Windows updates download? I guess where I'm going at is, has your computer been receiving system updates, security updates from Microsoft reliably?
Yes, I have in the past.
So
In the past. But...
Okay.
Well, do you recall, did you get the one from the beginning of this month in June, to your knowledge?
I'm not really mm-hmm. sure.
And you could check that out in the control panel, yeah. Programs and Features as well. And there's a tab in there for, what is it, updates?
Updates.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then you can actually sort once the list builds by date, and you can see if your computer has actually received updates. What I'm going for is I want to make sure your computer has been receiving security updates to see if, because Microsoft Security Essentials also gets its updates mm-hmm. Through mm-hmm. Windows Update. I want to make sure Windows Update isn't damaged, which can happen,
mm-hmm.
which is a little more in depth of a repair.
You've got Security Essentials or Defender?
Essentials.
Essentials.
Okay.
Well, is that what you would recommend for people who have Windows 7? Because as I remember, it was the most robust.
Well, the thing is, I mean, as time goes on, I know he's staying with 7 for a reason, but as time goes on, he's going to find that he's going to be running into more and more of these kind of issues with 7, unfortunately. But like Ed said, just uninstall it and reinstall it. Probably corrupted the update file, corrupted somewhere, and that's the easiest and most logical thing to do. Mm-hmm. Or, it could be a virus too stopping you from updates as well.
Right. So, there are some viruses that will actually stop Security Essentials and also stop Windows updates. That's mm-hmm. why I brought that up as well.
So would you run Malwarebytes then as a precaution for that?
Sure.
It's always good to run Malwarebytes. If you haven't run it in a while or have never run it, you could download it from malwarebytes.com or .org. They're both the same site now. Mm-hmm. And find their free version of it. And you can download it, run it, let it update, scan your computer. And if it finds something, great. When you're done, you can uninstall it. Yeah. You never use it again. If you install Malwarebytes, it's going to probably install a 30-day trial.
Mm-hmm.
Usually they play nice with each other, between Microsoft Security Essentials and Malwarebytes.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times, you mentioned last week that you had someone that, we had a listener that called in, and then you knew the answer, that they got a brand new computer, and it actually had 3 pieces of antivirus software running in there simultaneously.
And the problem was, they began to go to war, especially the antivirus programs begin to go to war with one another. So you should only have one antivirus program on, regardless of which one it was. Go ahead.
Excuse me. I have used that. I have scanned with that, and I have done the scan with the program itself, Essentials,
mm-hmm.
and came up with nothing.
Okay.
Maybe I should, instead of doing a quick scan, maybe I should do a full scan with Essentials.
Yeah. And the other thing you could do is do a disk check. So this is Windows 7. Does Windows 7, Shane, automatically do like a health report on your disk drive? Or would it be beneficial for him to go into My Computer, go on the C drive, you right mouse click on the C drive and select Properties, and then you go, there's a tool tab there, and you can say, scan my C drive for disk errors.
Unfortunately, okay. I've ran the disk in and found that it went through fine, but there was problems with the disk.
Okay.
A lot of times when you do you're booting your computer, it'll do a quick test of a disk real quick.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's possible he's got a bad sector where the actual Defender, the security software, is installed. That could be causing it. But I would, the first thing and the easiest thing is uninstall and then reinstall. That's the quickest, easiest thing to figure out.
Yeah, try that before you tinker around with other things, unless you enjoy tinkering. Okay, Bob.
Okay.
Let us know. Let us know.
Thank you very much.
Let us know how it turns out for you.
Yeah, please do. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for being with us and for asking that question, helping other people as well. All right, let's go to Steve in Wyandotte. How may we help you here on the Internet Advisor?
Hello, guys. I always listen to your show. I'm a heavy user of Chrome, and I know they've been pushing a lot of the extensions, and I know Microsoft is pushing their Windows 10 with their IE stuff, but I'm not going to go on that. But what kind of things should I be using that maybe I'm not using on Chrome?
I'm a Windows Edge. I mean, I use Chrome.
You use Edge?
I use
Chrome, but I don't use any additional add-ons.
Well, like, I use a lot of them.
Yeah. I mean, there's some people that use the password add-ons. There's people that use the pop-up blockers.
Nice. Adblock is nice. Yeah.
I have a ton. As a matter of fact, I have Evernote on there. I've got LastPass, which is my password manager. I've got Adblock.
Mm-hmm.
I've got something from Amazon. There is just a ton of them. And there's a, if I'm not wrong, let's see. Let me go into this. There's a store, isn't there? There's a Chrome for, yeah. If you go to the right-hand side, you see those three dots, the what they're called, the hamburger?
Okay.
The, you know, that drop-down there? And then you go to where the
okay, someone hasn't had dinner. I've never heard it called a hamburger before.
And I'm hungry too.
But those three little horizontal lines.
Yeah,
I love it. They look like a hot dog?
No, they look like a hamburger. No, I just can't get it out of my mind now.
If you're hungry enough, it looks like it. I'm trying to see if guys help me out here.
Yeah, well, I'm loading Chrome.
More tools. Save page.
That's why Chrome does.
Oh, here we go. If you go to More Tools on the right-hand side there, there is a button that says Extensions. And when you click on that, it will take you to the extension store, essentially, the Google store, which will have, just tons of stuff in there. They have Adblock, Add This,
well,
Amazon.
Maybe we probably have some listeners that might have some favorites that they just can't deal without. You know, you can have news scroll across and
Skype.
I mean, Skype.
Yep. There's tons of stuff that you can have on there.
But there's then, you know, I've run across people that have so many. I'm saying, you know, it's time to give some up. You know, 30 extensions is just way too much. You know?
But if you want extensions and you want to know what's out there and available, go to the far right end of your Chrome browser, and then those three dots that are there, click on that, go down, and you can find and go to More Tools, and then under More Tools, go to Extensions, and it'll take you to a page where you can find, my Lord, there are just dozens of these things that are in there, eBay, you name it, it's got it in there, but there's all sorts of resources there that you can...
Yeah, and it sounds like,
I'm just curious, so... Do any of those extensions eat up your cache or your memory or anything like that?
I mean, they all use up memory because it's a program.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
And so they can affect performance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I mentioned that some people I know, they've just had so many. But, and then you have to review them every once in a while because they will start using memory. You know, every tab you open is 50 megabyte. You know,
50
megabytes.
It's gobbling up. Yeah, it's going to be gobbling up resources. Wow. So keep that in mind. But go through there, and the ones I have installed are ones that I use on a regular basis. Okay, my friend, take care. Have a great weekend, Steve.
Bye-bye.
Back with the rest of you in just a moment. I want to thank Danielle Mason, who is our ace engineer during this hour of the program. Danielle, thank you for being there, and she's also our producer answering questions for you and getting you online, like Dorothy from Warren. We'll get to you in just a moment, but I want to remind you that our phone lines are open right now for your current problems, whatever that may be. It may be with a printer. It may be with your cell phone, it may be with your computer, whatever it is. We'd love to give you a hand, and we've got some folks in studio that have had lots of experience putting hands on computers and getting some solutions. One of them is Shane Hamlin, and Shane, your store is in Sterling Heights.
Sterling Heights at 18, oh boy, Shaner and 19 Mile Road in Sterling Heights.
That's yes. Right, Shaner and 19, and look for it in a little strip ball there. Do a great job.
And it's called
Comptech.
Comptech
Service. That's
so,
right.
Computer and technician put together Comptech.
Very good. Yeah. And you can find him out there. He's helped lots and lots of people from our program who have gone out there and have gotten great service. By the way, I want to mention this. Not only do we promote and encourage you to visit local stores like Shane's, but if you go to internetadvisor.net, if you go all the way to the bottom, you'll see a little off to the right-hand side, a guy who looked like a nerd. And next to him, it says, Trusted Local Computer Repair Shops. Those are shops that you folks have recommended to us, like Shane's Place and some of the others. Because I think that there's a huge advantage to getting to know a good local repair shop, Shane. The big boxes are nice for discounted prices on equipment.
Yeah, it's like a good hardware store where the old guy's in there, and he knows where every nut, bolt, screw, and washer is, and he goes in the back, and he gets the part you want for your appliance. Yeah, it's just like that.
I just had that happen. Matter of fact, this week, there's a hardware store called Friends, R-A-F-F-R-E-N-Z, in downtown Royal Oak, and I had a problem
He was running it now. Friends and Sons, yeah.
I had a problem with a certain part of my drill, and he said, just bring the whole thing in, and I'll find something to replace it.
The big box don't sponsor our show. So,
no.
I mean, I tell you what, I stay away from them because you're not going to get the service you need there.
Yep.
You're just not. I mean, I found out at one place, someone came in, a lot of these big box places aren't even carrying the standards anymore like they had at one time, like a solid state hard drive and things like this. They're getting harder and harder to find in these stores.
Really?
I couldn't believe it. But, I've got customers from the show. I've been doing the show for a long time. And they come in all the time, regulars from the show.
Yep.
And they just come in and just want to say hello or just have a question.
Yep.
It doesn't charge you. It doesn't cost anything to walk in the door.
No.
In fact, half of the people that walk in our door, we sit and chit-chat about their computer, and they leave not paying anything. I mean, it's just the way it is.
But that's how you build that kind of relationship.
Correct.
And so if you want to take – we have them from all over. Matter of fact, down into Toledo, we have some recommendations there. As far out as Jackson, we have a couple of recommendations. And all over metropolitan Detroit, you'll find that, again, if you go to internetadvisor.net, down to the bottom of the page, Trusted Local Computer Repair Shops, click on that. And Tom Lawrence was in from one of those places the other day. And great, great service that they can give you out there. Okay, that's just a reminder for something that's available to you all all the time. But I also want to encourage you right now to give us a call at 800-859-0957. The bell will ring on the door. Danielle will get you in line, and we'll get you on the air and get some help for you. So let's say hello to Dorothy from Warren. Dorothy, how may we help you here?
I have a problem.
Yes, ma'am.
I have an Asus computer that's about 7 years old.
Okay.
And when I went to put on, I get this message. It says, recovery. Your PC/device needs to be repaired. The boot configuration data for your PC is missing or contains errors. Then it tells me file, backslash, boot, backslash.
Yeah.
B is in boy, C is in Charlie, D is in David.
Mm-hmm.
Then it gives me an error code.
Yeah.
And it says you'll need to use recovery tools. If you don't have any installation media like a disk or USB drive, contact your PC administrator or PC device manufacturer.
Yeah. That's a legitimate error message.
Okay, good.
I think you have Windows XP?
No, this is
7?
A 10. I have 10.
Oh, you have 10.
That's
an old school error message. I haven't seen that's a blue screen message, isn't it?
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen those in a while. So you probably upgraded your. Yeah, obviously,
I did.
You did, yeah.
I had 7
well,
and I upgraded
and,
to
10. And, having a 7-year old computer, I don't know how well 10 would have taken to your computer.
Just,
it worked for quite a while.
Yeah, Yeah.
Yeah, and then I got this message. I bought a new computer.
Okay, good.
But I have some Windows documents on there that I, you know, Word documents that I would like to get off. How can I do that?
Well, that's not a hard thing to do at all. You can either do it yourself or you can, like we were talking about, take it to a local computer store and they'll do it for you.
Okay.
It's not expensive to have done. You can get what they call an external hard drive case, an enclosure case from the big box store or even a store like ours. And you'll install it. It takes probably about 5-10 minutes to put in. And then it creates this little, it turns into an external drive. And you would plug that into your new computer. And that'll show up, your drive will show up as a new drive letter in your new computer. And you can just copy the stuff you need.
Yeah, there's usually a YouTube video that you can go and say, I have a, and who's the manufacturer of your computer?
Asus.
So you have an Asus, and it's a laptop or desktop?
No, it's a laptop. Uh-huh.
So I have an Asus laptop hard drive removal.
Yep.
And you can watch some 13-year-old pimply-faced kid show you how to remove.
I'm sure.
And usually a hard drive is about 3 or 4 screws. You can get to them. They're usually under a trap door that's got a couple screws. Now,
you're talking about the hard drive in her current laptop and the laptop that's giving her trouble right now. Okay.
Some of the least expensive, lesser expensive laptops were encased and closed, and you'd have to actually crack it apart to get to it. But if it's one of those things, then you can bring it to somebody and they'll do it for you. The thing that I'm worried about is hopefully the hard drive, because the error message you're giving showing that there is some hardware issues with your machine, and hopefully your hard drive will boot up and run so that somebody can recover that data.
So what you're talking about essentially is doing heart surgery on her laptop
and pulling
out that hard drive. But it's not hard.
But very inexpensive as well. I mean, not an expensive thing to do. It doesn't take a ton of time.
No.
The big thing is to make sure that your hard drive is working, is going to allow us to retrieve that data. So what I would do is don't turn it on no more. Leave it. Don't shut it off.
Mm-hmm.
Until you are able to get it serviced or do it yourself.
Yep.
Right. And it's
I will take it to Shane.
Okay.
Good. That's fine. It's fine to have somebody else do that because they can do it very simple. I was going to ask you how experienced are you at you know, getting inside of your computer? And I would imagine.
I am not.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Listen, and I'm the type of guy that if I can show you or teach you how to do it yourself.
Yeah.
That's empowerment to you, and it gets you, makes you feel better about your computer experience.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But if it's something you can't handle, then you let me know and I'll take care of it for you.
And what we're also doing, and we're talking to you about this as well, we're talking to a lot of other people, thousands of people who listen to the show.
Of course.
So that if they feel, you know, comfort, like I wouldn't have any problem flipping a computer over and, matter of fact, I've done that, hunted for it, pull the hard drive out, get that external drive,
treasure,
and then just plug it into another computer and pull the stuff off the drive I needed. It's that simple. And when you're done with it, you feel good.
I have grandsons that probably do.
There you go. Get that next generation working for you.
Okay. It's an external hard drive case.
You can get an external hard drive case, and you know, I'm gonna do a public service announcement for all his technicians and all his tech guys. Normally, I would say, you know, contact your friend or you know your grandson, but I'm that guy in the family that people call, and when I get phone calls and I know exactly I haven't heard from someone in 6 months, and I know exactly why they're calling, I kind of sometimes resent the phone call.
I think it's probably worth just bringing it to you and have you fix it for me.
Because, you know, I am that guy that every family member calls to fix your computer, right?
Okay.
And I'm like, oh boy, I haven't heard from Aunt Shirley in a while. I wonder what's wrong. Shane, my computer's not working. Well, hello to you too, right?
All right. Have an apple pie ready for me when I come out there. All right. Thanks, Dorothy. You take care.
Thank you, guys.
All right. The number here, by the way, again, we have about 15 minutes before the end of the program. We'd love to help you, and unusually so, this end of the program, we are light on calls, and we'd love to take you in here. So if you've been wondering, should I give a call or not, this is the time to give a call. 800-859-0957. When we come back, Shane also, and we can talk about preparing for electrical storms coming
up.
And that's something you do want to think about for this summer with some violent storms that have come through this area already and will be coming through.
Yeah.
Be careful out there. We've got some advice for you there as well. But again, that number is 800-859-0957. Hey, by the way, I want to thank Daniel Mason again for a great job she's doing answering phones and engineering our program. Thank you. And Shane Hamblin, thank you so much for being in here.
Always.
And helping out with the program. Ed has been here, and we've also had Gary Baker online from down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about, we were chatting during the break, you're saying we need to talk a little bit about preparing for upcoming electrical storms.
Yeah, it's the season now. I mean, there's storms. Just this past few days, we've had some electrical storms whip through. And I always tell people, this is, can you know, that every year you have that time of year where you change, you know, where your the hour goes forward or back.
Yeah,
you change your
batteries.
Same thing. You need to, every couple of years, you need to change out those power strips and surge protectors.
Because more than likely, they've protected you. Correct. And weakened.
I like to tell people to think of a power surge or surge protector power strip as some flypaper. Over time, the flies can stick to it, and then it fills up with flies, and there's no more room for flies. So now the flies can get right through. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Same thing. Every time there's a bolt of electricity or a short or a surge, they take a little bit of a damage that prevents that from coming through, and over time. Those capacitors, the caps, or whatever they're using, are gone or shot.
I'm guilty of that. I have surge protectors that are 20 years old because I like having six outlets behind that desk. Yep. And you're right. I haven't changed mine.
And I tell people, I said, you know, at least I would say every 3 to 4 years to be safe. If they don't want to do it every years.
Like Ed, I don't think about that. That's a very good point.
Don't run off to the dollar store, Dollar General, and get yourself a $2 surge protector because you want a power strip and surge protector combo.
And that's what you're plugged into is $2 Dollar General. In the studio here.
But that's just probably a power strip. That's probably not a surge protector.
That's correct.
That combination.
You want to make sure it's protected to so many joules, whatever the 2,500 joules, whatever the protection is. You want to have some protection there. You're going to spend probably somewhere a good one that's going to be a safe one to use, probably somewhere in the $19 to $20 range.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And you don't want to skimp on this because. Yeah. You skimp on it, you'll pay for that with a big hit.
Well, we're just not talking about computers. We're also talking about your TVs.
Yeah.
Think about it. You just paid $700 for that 60-inch TV, and you got it on a 30-year-old surge suppressor. You think your homeowner's insurance is going to take care of that? No way,
Jose.
No, not without that $500 deductible unless you carried a separate policy.
Correct.
Am I speaking from experience? No. I've heard horror stories.
And most of those surge protectors will have a warranty slip where you have to make sure you register it.
Yeah.
So you're protected. So if something happens, some of them have a $50,000 protection limit on them. Mm-hmm. So make sure you fill out the paperwork.
Yeah, and put it in there. Good idea. All right, let's go to Anthony from Flint. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Hi. I have a Lenovo laptop. It's probably about 5 years old. Mm-hmm. It's been Windows 10 for a while. It was one of the higher end when I got it. So I don't think it's necessarily too old or not powerful enough for it. But since one of the last Windows 10 updates towards the end of May, it's been having a hard time starting up. So it just kind of sits at a black screen for anywhere between like 15 minutes to like 12 hours.
Whoa!
So I think it's just from what I've been looking at, more of an some kind of issue with the Windows update.
Yeah.
I was able to, you know, keep it going, you know, being able to turn it on and stuff like that. I just kind of had to wait. But I did realize that every time I went to shut it down, it would say update and shut down, but then it would never actually update.
Mm.
So it was that's what kind of tipped me off to the update thing. I did recently run a Windows update checker or fixer, it did do the updates. I've been afraid to turn it off since, though, because that time took me quite a while.
Well, good for you for finding the Microsoft Fix-It article on the Windows update fix.
Great. Let me ask you a quick question. Are you all the way up to the creators update?
Am I what? I believe so. Yep.
Yeah, if you look, you know the way that tells. If you look at your little shield that protects you, your antivirus shield, you'll have the little icon over the shield now.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm driving right now, but I'm pretty sure that was what it was.
What is the icon that's there, Shane?
It's before you just had the plain white shield.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's a little green and blue little icon on it, so when you click on it, it actually opens up and looks a little different. But you can tell immediately by looking at the shield icon, if there's a little green emblem over it, then you've got the creators update, and that's where you want to be. Most likely, I'm going to tell you what's going on is, one, you either have a virus or two, one of the updates drivers, something is hung up.
Yep.
It's not processed. You know, it's, the drivers in jiving with your system being a little bit older.
Would that fix have fixed it, the one that Ed, you were talking about, that he downloaded?
Well, it sounds like he went to the Microsoft site, downloaded the tool to repair the Windows update, and that's one of the things it does. And it may have fixed it. We hope so. Don't know. I mean, because
one of the managed the update. It got through it at least. So
how much memory is how much memory is in your system?
I think it's got a terabyte hard drive. Probably 300 gigs left, maybe.
What about memory? Like 4 gigs, 2 gigs,
eight gigs.
Ooh, yeah. You got a top of the line.
Yeah.
I did. Probably an i5. It's an i7.
Oh, wow, even better.
You should have no problem running whatever you want to run on that machine.
Yep.
Probably more likely. You know what happens? I tell people all the time, computers aren't perfect. Sometimes drivers hang up or the program doesn't install properly. Try even doing, if you do go to reboot and you do have the continue to have this problem, try to step back and go back a few months, you know, back prior to May and do a,
System restore.
Restore back a few days.
Okay.
And see if that takes care of it.
Yeah.
Because then you know something.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, something happened.
With the update.
And, and then maybe with the new, then we reapply those updates, then it'll probably work again. You know, it'll start working.
Okay.
All right.
Give it a try after that. All right, yeah.
Let us know how it turns out.
Yes, please do let us know how it turns out, all right?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Let's see if we can get James in here before we wrap up. James from Detroit, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How may we help you?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a question on Kodai and other streaming services. What's the latest news on them?
Oh, Kodi on the streaming service. You know, I haven't actually fired mine up since summer because I hang out outside. I don't know. You know, a lot of vendors, Kodi gets away with it because it doesn't actually stream the software. It just points you to sites that allow you to stream the video player. So
I haven't heard of this.
Oh, I've told you, but it used to be known as Microsoft or Xbox Media Center, XBMC.
Oh.
And then they went through a name change and it allows you to you could download various plugins, if you will, that allow you to stream TV to your computer for free.
It's called Kodi, KODI.TV. That's the address that I'm seeing here.
Right.
Am I right on that, James?
Great. So they haven't made it illegal or...
No, not
illegal. Well, I see what you're asking, yeah.
You know, I don't know if they haven't, because they're dancing a fine line. They're providing software that allows you to stream your own media and stuff, and then you can download add-ins that lets you stream BBC and other illegal streaming stuff. But,
well, it's open source code, so it's for everyone to use, and open source stuff, people have go with it and have fun. I mean, they can do all kinds. I mean, you're using it for Raspberry Pi stuff. There's an application for that they're using for.
Yeah.
Tons of things you can use it for.
Yeah, I have my smart TV, and I loaded Kodi on it because it's an Android application.
Yeah.
I can watch Kodi on my Android phone or my iPhone and on stream live radio
First
stations.
First time hearing
live
of this. That's fascinating.
And, you know, I'm sure the FCC doesn't like it too much, but, you know.
Well, as it stands right, I'm looking, for instance, the add-ons that they have there. James, I don't know if you use any of these. There's Plex, Rooster Teeth, Pluto.tv, SoundCloud, which I'm aware of, View, which is the PlayStation, and then there's Home Run TV and all sorts of other ones out there. Wow.
Right, because one of the things that's happening up by me is they're going to actually cancel some of the sports stations, so I won't be able to watch live Tiger baseball anymore. It'll be a paid subscription through Charter.
Wow.
And these guys actually have some fairly large sponsors behind them.
Yes, they do.
You know, with Alienware, which would be Dell.
Yeah.
NVIDIA as well. I mean.
And so again, folks, explore it for yourselves, KODI.TV. And James, as far as we know, I haven't seen anything here that would indicate that there are problems, but I don't take that as an endorsement, folks.
Right.
I would suggest you explore it yourself.
Right, because I had a Russian buddy. Russian, but that doesn't come out right. I had a guy that I work with that was from Russia that lives in Canada now, and he told me about it 6 years ago.
That still doesn't come out right.
Okay, I'm just going to shut up.
James, how has it been for you?
It's been hit or miss. I guess I'm on the add-on Exodus, and It was working great earlier this year, and then it had an update, and it kind of phased out.
Yeah, you know, I'm telling you, what I had to do many times is actually uninstall it and reinstall it again, because those add-ons have to be updated all the time.
All right, James, we got to head out of here, but thanks so much for giving us a call on that. Something new you learn every day. Thanks so much for being with us here on the Internet Advisor. Look for us online at internetadvisor.net.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on this PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.